Hi, I'm Mal Majoros. I am an 8-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Today we're talking about the atmosphere of work when you're sick or when you think you're ill. I'm talking to a good friend of mine. She works in the television industry, more specifically in the editorial department. That's what I did when I worked in Los Angeles so many years ago. I'm talking to Brianna London. She's an editor. She will be editing Queen of the South, which will be on USA. How are you today, Brianna?
I'm doing great, Mel. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. We kind of, as most people do, get hooked back up on Facebook. Which show did we work on together? I don't even remember.
We worked on Crossing Jordan.
Okay, it was Crossing Jordan. I have a story to tell you about that also.
Great.
Kind of funny, but not really. about the whole work atmosphere of the industry. So why don't we just get into a little bit about yourself, how you found out you were, well, how long you've been working in the industry and how you found out you had thyroid cancer.
Well, I have been working in the industry for 30 years and started when people worked on moviolas and figured out quickly that if I stayed ahead of the ball, meaning in technologically, mm-hmm. I could further my career probably faster than the normal way, which would have been that I would have probably had to be an assistant for about 10 years before
right.
being able to edit.
Well, just for people who don't know, a moviola is what they used to edit film on. So
that's
actual
correct.
Reels of film. Yeah, most people are like, wow, what is this?
Yeah, and they were heavy.
Yes. So I'm sorry.
And
continue.
Everything was slower paced, which actually now I relish. But I learned the technology as it was early forming and was able to move myself into a position of being an editor. I edited for many, many years, episodic television mostly, like Northern Exposure, Grey's Anatomy, Third Rock from the Sun.
Just a couple shows you might have heard
just
of out there.
Yeah. A lot of shows maybe you haven't heard of.
Right.
But it's been a great career. And then around 2005, I was actually supposed to have a hysterectomy. And when I went in for my preliminary pre-op appointment, my savvy doctor gave me a neck exam, and when he did, he felt a nodule on my thyroid, and he stopped the whole process and had me go through the testing, the fine needle biopsy, and then it came up positive that I had follicular thyroid cancer, which was quite a shock, and I did what I usually do, which is launch into research.
See, now my doctor said, at least take 24 hours before you read anything about it, because your head will explode. And I was like, she's wrong. And then my head did explode, and my fiance was like, didn't she tell you not to do that? Yes.
Well, actually, my doctor was so callous. I was told by him and by everybody else that most nodules on the thyroid are 90% benign. So I actually expected to hear that this was just another cyst and don't worry about it. He just marched into the room where I was sitting and said, well, you got cancer.
What? Oh my God.
Exactly. That's what I said.
Wow.
And then I said, then I told him, no, you go out of the room and you turn around and then you come back in here and you look me in the face and you tell me again what
right.
this is about. And he looked and he started laughing and he goes, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I deal with this all day long. And I said, yeah, but I don't.
Wow.
So,
Oh my gosh.
Not like you just told me my dailies fried in the bath. So,
do you still see that doctor?
No, actually.
Good.
Yes. So anyway, in 2006, because we were right on the border of 5 and 6, I had two thyroidectomies. They, for some reason, decided they were going to just take one lobe of my thyroid out and then test the other lobe overnight. And then they came back and said, well, we probably should have taken them both because the cancer had spread to the second lobe.
And you're like, couldn't you have checked that while you're on there? I mean,
I was so frustrated, and you know, it's part of it's part of being at the mercy of somebody else,
right,
which is unfortunate. And so I went back right back in and had that. And then 6 months, wait, no, 3 months later, I had the hysterectomy. And then on the fourth month out, I had the radioactive iodine treatment, which is very trippy because you become highly radioactive and have to be away from everybody for at least 8 days.
But
I
yeah,
felt like
so,
I was glowing.
So where did you, where do you seclude yourself for that?
Well, at that time I had a young child, so my husband and my child went and lived with my parents, and I lived by myself, and you have to be very careful not to use certain things, like you can't use an iPhone, you can't use a laptop, because you contaminate everything that you touch. So everything that I was going to touch was wrapped in saran wrap, like
your grandma in the 70s and 60s, right?
Yes. I kept myself confined mostly to one room and one bathroom, and I had previously wrapped the remote control and the telephone and everything. The health insurance companies don't want to pay for you to be sequestered overnight. There are certain hospitals that disregard that and have the policy that you go into a lead-lined room and you stay there for at least 3 nights till your numbers register safe enough to be temporarily out in public.
Right.
But there's other medical institutions, such as UCLA, which just have you pop the pill and then say goodbye, which I think is a huge safety hazard to society, because what if you get on a bus? What if you stand next to a pregnant woman? It's almost guaranteed that the baby will get thyroid cancer when that baby is maybe 50.
That's crazy.
I really feel that I got my thyroid cancer because I lived in the valley near Rocketdyne.
Oh.
And there has just been a big expose on NBC about Rocketdyne and how polluted and dangerous that property in Simi Valley still is. It's still contaminated. And there was a nuclear radioactive mistake, and they released a lot of radioactive gas into the air that covered 60 miles of it blanketed 60 miles of Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
And as a little girl, my dad and I had a Saturday ritual where we would rent horses and go riding all through that area. So we were kicking up the dirt and breathing the dust and being exposed. And I have to think that there was a correlation, because there's a whole swath of people in the Northern Valley that had thyroid cancer and other kinds of cancers that happen if you have high exposure to radioactive dust. And
wow, that's crazy. That's insane to think that.
At the time, I was working on Grey's Anatomy, and we were on hiatus, and I felt pressured to schedule my surgeries during hiatus, because if I were to have scheduled my surgeries during production, they would have just replaced me. And that's the culture, unfortunately, of the film industry,
right,
is that they have a product that has to get out. There's a time, they're on the clock, and you don't feel comfortable as a worker bee to admit to anybody that you're sick, or you might be sick, and you need to get some medical attention.
Unless you're one of the actors or producers, someone what they call above the line, who you as the general public would recognize, say you worked on Army Wives, say Catherine Bell or Jill Hennessy, who was on Crossing Jordan, someone like that.
Yes.
The person who edits the show, which most people wouldn't know who that is.
Exactly. And while you're supposed to, I believe, legally be allowed to get keep your job if mm-hmm. it's a medical situation. It just doesn't work that way, and I think that's because the movie industry and TV industry is very transitory.
Yes.
And it's very short. The length of your jobs are very short. So even if they held it for you, the show might not even be around by the time you come back. You don't know.
Right. But that's still, that's still against the law. I mean, we were talking before the show about, for example, the incident with Sarah Jones on the railroad track. Mm-hmm. That's brought up a whole safety issue that a lot of people, you know, there's a number now that people in the industry can call and feel if they're not being safe on camera, on shoots and on location. And I think this number should be the same thing for maybe someone who's sick. And they're like, well, they're telling me I can't go to the doctor. And I mean, how, that's just shocking to me.
Yeah, and also because we work 12 to 14-hour days, mm-hmm. it's difficult to schedule medical appointments.
Right.
And it's the culture is something that really needs to be examined. I did know Sarah Jones. We worked on Army Wives together, although nice. She was in Charleston and I was editing in Santa Monica with the producers and the writers. She did come to Los Angeles and hang with the crew. She was
nice.
So I have since heard from very close mutual friends that Sarah had indicated to her dad the night before the train accident mm-hmm. that she was concerned that they were going to be shooting on railroad tracks and that she didn't feel real confident by the information or lack of information that they had received
right.
about the safety of being on the track. And yet she didn't feel comfortable speaking up and challenging it.
Right.
And the same for, we recently, just this weekend, lost a wonderful AP that's an associate producer woman in her 50s who had been feeling ill for a little while, for a few months, but her responsibilities are to be on the mixing stage for many, many, many hours to get the episodes mixed, and unfortunately right. ignored or didn't feel comfortable, I'm not sure which, going to the doctor. And sadly, she was diagnosed Thursday with leukemia and died on Sunday.
That's
shock of everybody. And I also know editors that have worked while they were having chemo and tried to keep it under wraps because they feared they would lose their jobs.
And you need
to keep working, because if you don't keep your hours, you lose your insurance, medical insurance.
Right, is really dumb. But I mean, yeah, I mean, especially something like cancer, I mean, it's not something that you know, it's either genetics or you said you possibly got it from Rocketdyne. It's not something that, oh, well, it's a cold, so I can kind of, you know, I can kind of work through this. You know, it's a difficult process with the treatment and the radiation, and it makes you tired and it just weakens your immune system. And to have people be afraid to say, look, I'm going through chemo. I mean, there's always someone who can fill in for you while you're getting better. I mean, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what job you're at. I mean, for all, like we said, we were talking before the show, this could probably translate into any business anywhere. People mm-hmm. are always afraid either of financial issues or, you know, oh, well, if I go to the doctor and if I'm not feeling well, I can't afford to take that time off to go to the doctor and be sick. It's like, well, what's the alternative? I mean, if you don't have your health, you basically have nothing, as you know. You know,
right.
I mean, what's more important, like I say, your money or your life? Well,
right. And I came up against that. And finally, I felt like my body had been trying to tell me for years to speak up. I just fell into that whole culture of not speaking up. And finally, on my last job a year ago, mm-hmm. I got sick with the shingles because my immune system was so depleted from my treatments, from my many surgeries, from soldiering on, working the 12-hour days, sometimes 7 days a week.
Right.
And so I got shingles, and that was the big slap in the face. It was, how much more do you need to realize that you need to pay attention to yourself.
And what was your boss's? Yeah, I'm sorry. What was your boss's response to that when you finally went in and
basically, when I went to my boss and I even showed the rash to the boss, because I thought, okay, here's something tangible that might. Since I work in a visual medium,
right?
Maybe this will relate. And he just kind of looked at me and went, well, if you can't really handle it, you might want to think about leaving.
That's when I hate to say this, but like when the last job I worked at, which was after Crossing Jordan, which I worked with the guy who was going to be my boss, and I heard he was kind of, kind of rude to say, mm-hmm. to say that very nicely. And my dad had just passed away and I was having a hard time dealing with it. And he knew that. And all these signs were pointing for me to leave the industry. You know, my fiance had gotten into had a medical issue, so he came back to Michigan to get taken care of. Because I was working the 16-hour days, like you said, I couldn't take care of him. And I was like, you know, this is going on, and my dad passed away, and I just want to tell you that I'm having a hard time. No lie, without like he just paused and he was like, I thought you'd be over that by now. And it took every bit of strength of mine not to jump over the desk and punch him in the face. It was my dad, you know. I mean, less than 3 months, he had just shockingly passed away after battling these other things. And it's like, you thought I'd be over that by now? Like, you know, it's not like I just, like, sold a car. And
right.
Was like, oh, I just, you know, I had that car since I was 16. No. I mean, that is the culture that we're talking about. When people see movies like The Devil Wears Prada or Swimming with Sharks, they're like, that doesn't happen in real life. Well, unfortunately, it does.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who say, well, you know what, Brianna, you're sick right now with the shingles, but there's like 15 other editors we could get right now that would be happy to work where you are. Okay, well, how many of those 15 other editors are going to get shingles and get sick before people realize? If you don't have a healthy cast and crew, and if you don't take care of your employees, then they're not going to want to take care of you. I mean, you know who we're not going to mention any names, but you know who this producer was on this show. The chances are if someone says, hey, I'm on a show with, you know, John Doe as my producer, what do you think? I don't think you're going to hesitate to tell your friends, well, this is what happened.
Right.
Unfortunately, nothing may come of it, but something may. And it's hard to change the culture, but I think unfortunately with, like you said, how awesome Sarah was, Sarah Jones, you know, that safety could translate into the safety, the basic human nature of going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody likes going to the doctor, I'll be honest with you. There's not one person who goes, you know what are you going to do today? I'm going to the doctor. Yeah. You know, it's like the one place that nobody wants to go to, but it's the most important visit that you can make.
That's right. And taking the year off mm-hmm. actually has been the greatest gift. Now,
yes.
Of course, we struggled financially.
Of course.
It was scary at times and frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get, for a short period of time, I was able to get disability because of my shingles.
Oh.
But so that was a little helpful for sure. But that didn't last the whole time.
No.
So it was also very good for my mind because I was able to explore doing other things, a little bit of volunteering, a mm-hmm. little bit. I also sat down and worked on a novel that I had been wanting to write for a very long time and had been researching for a very long time. And then also I learned a new skill, and that was I love horses, and I got an opportunity to take a few clinics with experienced people who do what's called liberty, which is being able to communicate with the animal without the use of any ropes or any halters.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is fascinating because you learn herd mentality. And later on, that actually helped me with my recovery because I began to see, where do I fit in my community? Where do I fit in my family? Where do I fit in amongst my friends? And how can I take a leadership role? How can I be the lead mayor? How can I overcome the fear I have of people labeling me, oh, she had cancer, so
yep.
she's weak.
Mm-hmm.
Because you fear being seen as weak. And that that's a stigma that's tough to, that's a challenge. And I, learning by watching the horses in a herd and understanding how they operate amongst themselves in their community has helped me see that it's important that I do feel confident to speak up and you know, not everything's going to go my direction. I could speak up and say, hey, you're overworking us, or
right,
I want to take my lunch break. I'm going to take it now. And they can fight me on it. Like you, I had a similar experience where I was actually at the side of my mother's deathbed and holding her hand, and I got a text from my AP saying, when are you coming back? We have a cut due. And I...
You're like, well, I'm not going to put a pillow over her head, so...
Yeah. It's like, excuse me, just a minute. Let me ask my mom. Mom, when are you dying?
Exactly.
I mean, ugh. I'm learning now that it's so important to feel that it's okay to speak up, mm-hmm. and it's okay if other people turn away from me because I had cancer.
Well, they're missing out.
Right. I don't need them in my herd.
Right.
And that's okay. And that's what's taken me a year of learning meditation, learning to breathe, and understanding that it's, I mean, the work I was doing, it's not like I was saving lives.
Exactly. And the weird thing is that you would think people in California, being that's, you always see California as a forefront of everything. You would think, especially people in the entertainment business, they would get that it wouldn't be always about the show or the movie or whatever project you're working on, but they don't.
No, because we run on fear out here.
Right.
Got to get the good ratings, got to get the advertiser money, the actresses and actors, their performances have to be critiqued well. I mean, mm-hmm. everything's like, you're only as good as your last job, so
exactly.
Your last job better be perfect. And that's a very scary way to live, because it's very, you're always on the ledge and you're full of anxiety.
Yeah, I remember one of the shows I worked on. I mean, I'm a big hockey fan and I like to play, and my boss dated a hockey player and she didn't like hockey and she didn't get my love for it. And it's like, well, I'm not the person that you dated. I don't go out there and like, I go out there for exercise and fun and to hang out with the people that I like to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not there to like beat someone's head in with a stick, because that's not hockey. You know, that's mm-hmm. not what and I think the other thing is people take their own experiences and place it on you. You know, okay, well, maybe they had somebody who was sick and died and that, I hate to say this, spoiled their, you know, they didn't get their cut in on time or something was late and that was, but you know what? Like I said, your health is the most important thing that you'll have. If you don't have that, I mean, you pretty much have nothing. And if you have a bunch of sick employees, they're not going to be any good to you either. And they're basic. I would think they would basically revolt. I'm really surprised that show that you were talking about, the editorial department, just didn't just say, you know what, screw you guys, we're out of here.
I know. It was that fear thing, fear of losing the paycheck, fear of not being able to mm-hmm. find another job to take its place right away, fear of losing your hours so that you won't have your health insurance.
Right. And, but I think there might be more people above the line who think like you do, who are also fearful of the people who are higher than them above the line. You know, like,
yes.
Like there could be producers who are like, yeah, I get that. I get that the editorial department is sick and they need like a day off or something to, you know, take a Friday off so they can have the whole weekend. But, you know, my boss is a total, you know, psycho. So they got to have the cut in to, you know, the 85 people so they can make their notes that we're all going to ignore.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. They're all afraid of the studio and the network executives.
Even though they never listen to them. Yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll just do that. And they'll, you know, it's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission, as they say.
Exactly. That's the culture, unfortunately. And so it's interesting how being a cancer survivor has to be secreted mm-hmm. in the below the line people. Now, for some of the above the line people, some of them use it as a cause.
Right.
And although there are some that hide they're afraid it's going to tarnish their image.
That's unfortunate. Well, we have like a couple minutes left, so I want to talk about your book that you're writing.
Ah, I'm very excited. Yes. I am writing a historical fictional novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a true story. When I was about 45 years old, a friend of mine said, "You never got bat mitzvahed, so I'm going to make you do this." And I joined an adult B'nai Mitzvah class, and I studied for a year. And something happened that really inspired me, and that was there was this little baby Torah, tiny Torah, that had been handwritten, lovingly handwritten by a scribe. And when they opened up the Torah, I discovered something embedded in the parchment that hadn't really been noticed before. And I'm not going to give it away because it has to do with my book. But
right.
I started thinking about the young man who had scribed this little Torah, and I had heard that the man had run through a burning inferno and grabbed the little Torah and then wrapped it around his waist and went from Vilna, Lithuania, all the way to Shanghai, China.
Whoa.
And I began to think about who did he meet and what danger was he in, and his love of the written word was so profound. And so he ends up being adopted for a short period of time by a Chinese family who is a well-to-do family, and the father of the family is a renowned poet. And they both approach the artistry of writing for different reasons, but they have this bond that forms. And there's also a love story, and there's the invasion of the Japanese, and it's got a lot going on for it. But I tell you, it was thrilling to do the research and then sit down and hear my characters talking in my head. Sometimes I began to wonder if I was going crazy, and get it on paper, and then the feeling of finishing the first draft was just a rush. I felt like cold air just blew right through my body. It was so invigorating. And it was something I could hold. It was tangible, and it was mine. And I had accomplished something, and I needed to do this. Even if it's on a smaller scale, everybody needs to feel that they've accomplished something, especially after battling cancer and surviving it. I mean, I'm like, so in awe of you, Mel, that you that you took your life into a different direction. That's a much healthier direction, but you're actually doing something that's helpful and positive, and also makes you feel good. And that I'm really so proud to hear you're doing. And writing this book was very cathartic for me. Just, it was an accomplishment. And right now it's being edited by a person who volunteered out of the goodness of her heart. She's a book editor, and she's actually editing my book.
That's
and
awesome.
Then I will make the corrections. And then I don't know what will happen to it. If I can't get it published by a recognized publisher, I will self-publish it and hand it out to all my friends and family and just feel good that something good came out of this. And mainly it was my prize for taking care of myself, finally, I feel.
So when do you think you'll have it all finished and ready to publish?
Ready to show?
Yeah.
It'll probably take me a couple months to finish the polish. And the only reason it will, because I'm starting this job. This job will hopefully give me my hours so that I can renew my health insurance. Then I don't know what I will do, whether I will be eligible to retire in July. I would love to keep writing because I just really enjoy that. But we'll see. It depends. Everything depends on the paycheck.
Yes. And just like that, the half hour is over. So I know we don't have a website for Brianna, but I want to say that if you are having any issues with your work, whether you work in the entertainment business or any other business, you know, talk to your HR department if you can. Talk to maybe somebody in the labor department. Nothing is more important than your health. You know, if you do happen to lose your job, there's other avenues to work out that way. Attorneys, whatever. I'm not saying that you will, but it's always a good thing to think about if you're getting sick. If you're not feeling well, if they don't give you the day off, too bad. Go to the doctor, because like your friend, she got sick on a Friday and she passed away on a Sunday. Was that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's just shocking. I mean, think about everyone that she left behind. I mean, you don't have time to get sick. You don't have time to go to the doctor, but you really don't have time to be sick. Like Brianna and I were off for like a year battling our respective diseases. So look for Brianna's name in the credits in Queen of the South on USA, which will be coming up shortly. And thank you for all of your time today.
Thank you, Mel, and be well.
You too. Well, hang on. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoris. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.